You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Hey there, boys and girls. Welcome to another edition of the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt, where I take you in a half-hour tour of the business of sports around the week, every week, give you my insights, my unique perspective. Hope you find this a unique podcast. You don't hear anything like this anywhere else in the big sports landscape out there, and it educates, informs, and maybe even entertains you for a half hour a week, the Business of Sports podcast. We're produced by Jack Connell, musical producer. That music here under me is my son, Sam Brandt. And as always, we're presented by DraftKings. A lot to get to today in a variety of sports. We will start, and I was only here a few days ago, but let's wrap up the NFL draft. A few things to say as we get going here on the NFL draft as we put the 2024 NFL draft in our rearview mirror. Number one, I'm not a scout. It's not my lane. I don't do that. I'm not here to grade. I think grades are ridiculous, but I know people have to do them. That's what we're here for in terms of media analysis. But who knows? Here I am, an expert in football, but not scouting. And my response is, who knows? Who knows on these players? Who knows on the quarterbacks? Chances are with six quarterbacks in the first 12 picks, some are going to hit, some are going to miss. Some are going to be flops. Some are going to be, is it going to be more like the 2020 draft where you had Burrow and Herbert and later on Jalen Hurts and Tua, or is it going to be more like the 2021 draft with Fields and Mac Jones and Zach Wilson and, of course, Trey Lance? I mean, what's it going to be? We don't know. We just don't know. And that's the thing. Thousands of man hours, millions of dollars go into this draft. We don't know. I think here's what you have to come down to. And this was me with the Packers and still me with the Packers and other teams, you know, the Ravens, maybe the Eagles, some of the other teams. Trust the scouting, right? At the end of the day, all you can do as a fan with these draft picks is trust the scouting. Do you think that you know better, or NFL Network knows better, or ESPN knows better, or Mel Kiper knows better, or Daniel Jeremiah knows better, or the Yahoo guy knows better, or the CBS guy knows better than your team scouts? If you really believe that, then you are really not trusting your team at all. So it really comes down to when you look at the draft and these 260 picks, do you trust your scouts? It really comes down to that. Not whether some media person thinks that the draft's an A or B or C or D plus or F. Do you trust your scouts? And I lived it in Green Bay for many years, and I've been trusting since, knowing that how much effort is put in by that scouting department. Trust them. I trust them more than the media scouts. I trust them more than the fan scouts. And that's really comes down to with these drafts. Do you trust your scouts? As a fan of your team right now, do you put full faith and trust in the scouting department? If you do, all right, great. You're happy with this draft. If you don't, you're not happy. So whether it's a sexy pick, a non-sexy pick, a quarterback, a non-quarterback, whether it's someone that someone else considers a reach or someone else considers great value, it's kind of irrelevant. Do you trust your scouting department? That really what it comes down to in looking back on the draft. Okay, a couple other things on the draft. The media, of course, 12 million people watching the first round of the draft on ESPN. Oh my God. You know, again, every year we talk about this. That's better than Major League Baseball World Series. It's better than NHL Stanley Cup. That's better than NBA Finals. It's just amazing. And I always say the reading of the names, that first night, Thursday night, gets a 12 million rating, 12 million viewers, and it is just Roger Goodell reading 32 names punctuated in among all these highlights and talk and talking heads and noise and military and whatever else they throw up there as an entertainment event for the NFL. And of course, the Detroit and 750,000 people. And I'm like, what are these people doing? Like, they get come up there with face paint and all these people, like, it's a lot of sitting around. Now, I know they had music the whole time and they're pumping up. I've been there when the TV camera comes over and the TV guy yells, get excited, scream. Yeah, of course, because these people aren't doing that naturally. But 12 million people. Wow. Just wow. Every year, it just continues to amaze me. It never ceases to amaze me. 12 million people watching the reading of names. Now, a couple things on the draft coverage. Number one, in the Pat McAfee coverage, you had sort of the biggest audience, and you had the interview with Roger Goodell. And one thing just stood out in that interview. He talked what I thought was nonchalantly. It's the best way I could put it. Matter-of-factly, maybe, better. About 18 games. About don't fans want regular games rather than preseason games. And here's the idea. We play one or two preseason games. We have an 18-game season. We pull it all the way up, follow it all through, get to President's Day weekend where Monday's off. So you have a holiday weekend where you're having the Super Bowl. Isn't that great? And everyone's nodding like, yeah, great. Everyone's talking about it. And I'm like, as the guy who studies this with labor relations and collective bargaining, I'm like, hello, there is this little pesky matter of getting the union to buy in. The players, remember them? And the way Goodell talked about it just made me think that he feels like there will be no resistance from the players on this. Or he feels, probably more appropriately, that there'll be resistance, but so what? They'll ram it down the players' throats, as they always do. Remember when the NFL Players Union and the NFL players said that moving to a 17th game is a non-negotiable for us? Remember back in 2020? And then within, I don't know, days, weeks, months, the NFL having a 17th game became a non-negotiable for them. And all of a sudden, the players had given up more inventory for them, 17th game. All of a sudden, the players are playing 17 games where they played 16 games forever, 14 games before that, and we're never going back. I stake my ground down. They're never going back to 16 games. And now Roger Goodell talks about nonchalantly, matter-of-factly, yeah, we'll go to 18. Why not? Well, he has to get it through the CBA, and that's not till 2030. So again, that's not happening anytime soon. But when it does come up, we have now telegraphed it. We're going to see a push for 18 games. Now, people say, well, the union will get something back in return. What exactly are they getting back? What exactly did they get back in 2020? I still can't figure that out. People say, well, an extra pay for a game. Not really. It's just all the money goes into a pool and then it's split. And it's, you know, it's up to 48.5% for the players, but that excludes all the revenues for stadium naming rights, for suite revenue, for a lot of the gambling revenue, for premium seating revenue, for relocation fees, for fees from teams moving and expansion fees for owners. That's all excluded from the players. So what the players keep getting is this, oh, we'll give you more time in the offseason. Oh, great. Owners will do that in a heartbeat. Oh, we'll give you more concussion, you know, that you can wear the guardian caps. Great. Owners will do that in a heartbeat. Where do they sign up? So again, 18 games. Like, okay. All right. Again, Roger Goodell expressing a viewpoint which seemed to be like, we don't really care if the players want it or not. We're getting it. Okay. Also in the broadcast, Bill Belichick getting a lot of kudos for him. I think people are so unused to him speaking, you know, about anything but just crankiness about being asked media questions as the head coach of the Patriots. So anything. It was a low bar for Belichick. But I want to comment on one thing he said. He talked about acquiring Randy Boss back in whatever that was, 2006, 2007. We were in on that. I was in on that with the Packers. And talking to Buss Cook, the agent for Randy Moss. And here's the deal why we didn't make the deal on Randy Moss. We wanted more than a one-year deal. Moss was made available by the Raiders. He wanted out. They wanted to move him. And it wasn't going to be a lot of draft compensation to move him. So we were in it. The Patriots were in it. Where we stalled was we didn't want a one-year deal. They wanted a one-year deal. They wanted to just rehabilitate his image, show he could play again, and then get the big deal the next year. And ultimately, the Patriots gave him that. They gave him that one-year deal, and whatever year that was, he played great, and he got the big deal from the Patriots. We didn't want to potentially set him up for a big deal somewhere else, and we wanted a two-year deal, and we tried to negotiate it, and once the Patriots came in with that one-year deal, they got him. So that's what Belichick was talking about on the air when he talked about acquiring Randy Moss. And of course, he was a great player for the Patriots. But that came down to sort of a principled stance that we'll acquire Moss, but Ted Thompson was very clear with me, let's not do this for 1 year. We want more than 1 year. We'll do a second year. We'll do a bonus early March, second year, but we're not going to do a one-year deal for Moss. Okay. Other things I want to get to. College settlement. Yes, there is news that we're at an inflection point in college sports, as everyone knows. This is truly a unique time. Everyone's wondering how this is all going to work out. In fact, one of my assignments for the end of the semester for my students was fix it. Fix college sports. How would you do that? NIL is out of control. It's no longer NIL. It's pay for play. Transfer portal every year. There's no cap. There's free agency every year. So anyway, what's happening now is that we've talked about lawyers are in deep discussions, quote unquote, with college leaders about settling all this. And then what does that mean? Well, settling the house suit. The house suit has two classes against the NCAA. One is players up in two from like 2016 to 2020 that didn't get NIL because NIL didn't come into 2021. That would be hundreds of millions, if not billions, to settle that. And then, of course, going forward with a share of TV revenues is part of that lawsuit as well. Now, of course, there are many other lawsuits going on, including one headed by Jeffrey Kessler, sort of a pay for play. There's another going on that involves unionization. There's lawsuits going on all about benefits. It's everywhere. But the idea is, and the reports are, that there's deep discussions about a settlement. And from what I can tell, a lot of pieces going on, a lot of moving parts, it would allow for some revenue sharing with the players that would be, and a figure thrown around would be 15 to 20 million. 15 to 20 million shared revenue to players. And for that, of course, the players would agree to a cap and they would agree to some kind of mandatory staying at the university more than 1 year. Now, a lot of issues here because it's so hard to do this. First of all, in any negotiation, who are we talking about? Are we talking about the school, the conference, the NCAA? Are we talking about only football, basketball players? Are we talking about non-revenue sports? Are we talking about Power Five? Are we talking about Group of Five, FCS? These are all questions that have to be answered. But I think a big thing to note is that, say, 15 to 20 million, if that's the revenue sharing go to the players, for a school like Ohio State or Alabama or Penn State, you know, 15 to 20 million is a small percentage of overall revenues. For a school like, pick a name, Miami of Ohio, a school like Vanderbilt, a school like where I am, Villanova, 15 to 20 million is a huge percentage of overall revenues. So these are the kind of things that you have to look at. How will this work? Well, I think what I'm saying here is there are going to be a lot of questions about this proposed settlement. We're going to talk about it a lot more on this program. I'll get experts on this. Something that's going to go on for a while. But it just shows you there are more questions than answers. But having said all that, it'll be better than what it is now because it's a free-for-all. And you can't have anarchy in any form of sports unless that's, you know, you want to shake out and only end up with a few different teams. So all the impediments to getting this done, as I say, are a better result than the way it is now. Sure, there's going to be a lot of inequity. if we talk about a percentage of revenues, that could be better than just 15 to 20 million revenue share with the players. But we'll see. We'll see how this all shakes out. Jeffrey Kessler, who has been the players' lawyer for the NBPA, for the NFLPA, represent Tom Brady, is heavily involved on the player side here. He's been involved in these kind of negotiations. It could be a codification of the House lawsuit. That is an overall global settlement of a lot of lawsuits. Sounds familiar because the NFL did this in 1993, a codification of the Reggie White versus NFL settlement. At that time, there was no union because they had decertified. So this would be a recertification of the union along with a settlement. Long way to go, but just wanted to get that in. Okay, other things I want to talk about. Basketball. There's a lot going on in the playoffs. Of course, I'm a Sixers fan as I record this. This is their reckoning tonight, game five against the Knicks. Hope they survive. If not, a real reckoning for Embiid and the Sixers. But let's talk about the Suns. And I know Lakers are out. That's big news. But really, the Suns. This is my point about all in. As listeners who know me, I've never been a fan of all in team sports. Part of it is my background with the Packers, you know, a team that fundamentally eschews quick fixes, sexy free agent signings. The Packers' way is slow and steady. Trust scouting, trust your young players, trust your coaches to play them, a draft and develop build throughout. But also part of it is my realization as someone with some expertise in this, that team sports require more than stars. Even in basketball, where only five people play. And American sports are built to create and ensure competitive balance. I think more often than not, these all-ins end up being all out. And I present to you the 2023-2024 Phoenix Suns. Fans and media hailed the arrival of Kevin Durant in a trade, of Bradley Beal in a trade, and they joined Devin Booker, a star. They have this triumvirate, a big three, acquired by the new owner who paid $4 billion, a record-setting price, to have the Suns. Matt Ishbia. Now, Ishbia is paying $190 million payroll for this team. Let me say that again. $190 million payroll on a $114 million cap. That's a whole nother story, how the cap is so soft in the NBA. Even with these aprons and luxury taxes, he went way over. NBA cap, I always say, is the softest cap in sports. It's the yarmulke of sports. So he's paying that $190 million payroll for the team, and that combines with a $70 million luxury tax. So he's paying $260 million for this team, right, in this past year. And they get swept by the Timberwolves in the first round of the playoffs. That's one thing. Okay, but look at the future. I mean, it's worse looking forward than behind, right? With these kind of teams, all in is a razor's edge. Even if they got to the finals, you know, would you feel good about them losing in the finals? Even if they got to the conference finals? Now, look at them. They have no draft capital. They've used that up for Beal and Durant. They have no cap room. They're gone. It's already a ridiculous luxury tax charge. And they have these three players going to make $140, $150 million by themselves next year, way over the cap for three players. Now, Booker's relatively young. Durant's getting older, and Durant's not what he was. Not that he's not a top 15 player in the NBA, but he used to be a top five player. Maybe he's a top 10 player now, at best. And then you have Beal. Beal has traditionally been hurt, and we know this about athletes. When they've been chronically injured, it doesn't get better when they get older. Like, it doesn't get better with a big contract, and B, getting older. Beal's going to make $50-plus million in the next couple of years. How about that? Sitting on your payroll, sitting on your cap. You know he's going to be hurt. You know he's not worth that. And he's gone from the Wizards, and he's on the Suns, and Suns going to have no chance of moving that contract. All right, so my point is, all in sounds good, sexy. Everyone's excited, including the owner, who should be a little more sober about this. but it never works. Now, I know Los Angeles Rams, I've always gotten that from Rams fans. Look, they got the Super Bowl, but it's a razor's edge. And that championship game against the Niners, if the Niners D-back holds the interception, doesn't drop it, then the Rams never get it. And the Rams have been in cap jail the past couple of years. Still not out of it. Now, the Rams are good at drafting. That has helped them out of this problem. And steals like Puka Nacua, yeah, great. But listen, again, it's not only because of my Packers background. I just believe in team sports. You need sustained success. Slow and steady is the way. Draft and develop. Sign your core players. Don't go for the sec. The quick fixes never work. And I give you, again, the Phoenix Suns. Speaking of the NBA, I talked last week about their media deal being up. They were at $25 billion over 9 years. Their goal was to get over $50 billion. That seems to be coming. What seems to be secure, again, nothing announced, but is that Amazon's in. You know, we talked about Amazon. Maybe they get in. They're getting in. And maybe they'll have this night like they have in football. They have Thursday nights. They're going to get that in the NBA. And now we hear about NBC, which had the rights during my youth, getting back in and maybe pushing out TNT. We know ESPN's going to be in there. Now we know Amazon, but it looks like NBC getting back in for $2.5 billion a year. So we could see the rights go over 50. Again, the goal of $75 billion on these cumulative media deals. Wow, even approaching NFL-like numbers. I don't know if they'll get there, but seems like they're gonna zoom past this $50 billion number in their cumulative media deals going forward. Okay, last thing. Back to the NFL, we just have to know that these contracts are never what they appear to be, certainly for the big new free agent signings, but even for the extensions. Okay, last week we hear an extension for A.J. Brown, $96 million extension, $32 million, zooming past the number at top rate for NFL wide receivers. Well, I said at the time, I think I said here a week ago, I don't know about that. I don't know if A.J. Brown will get $92 million, $96 million. So you look closer. Now, I don't care about anything past these 3 years because that's where the guarantees are. And not all of it's guaranteed in the first 3 years. But here's where we are. Before the extension, A.J. Brown was scheduled to make $68 million over the next 3 years. Okay, $68 million. That's a good number. That's $22 to $23 million a year. Good number. Now, A.J. Brown is going to make $80 million over the next 3 years. Okay, so let's look at what this extension really is. He's getting the guarantees. Great. You know, in case anyone thought that A.J. Brown would not be on a roster the next 3 years. You think one of the top five receivers in the league, that's not an issue, but it becomes an issue in this extension because he did all this for $12 million. Now, listen, $12 million is great wealth. I'm not saying that's bad, but it's not 96 million new money as some people are reporting about this extension. So again, in the 3 years that matter, A.J. Brown went from 68 million to 80 million. So this really becomes a $12 million deal over 3 years, $4 million a year. That's what it is, $4 million a year. So again, these extensions and this reporting is not what it is supposed to be. A.J. Brown, 3 years, $80 million versus 3 years, $60 million, $68 million. He got $12 million. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's $4 million a year over the next 3 years. Okay. Travis Kelce, you know him, the boyfriend. He gets a new extension. And it's reported $34.25 million over these 2 years. And with the way I think this is, it's replacing the 2 years that were existing. There's no new years. So it's not really an extension. It's a rework of these 2 years since an upgrade. But I have to look more into this. But the way I'm reading Travis Kelce's deal before this extension is $15 million this year, $17.25 million next year. The way I'm reading Travis Kelce's deal after the upgrade is $17 million this year, $17.25 million next year. Now, got the guarantees. Now, again, guarantees sound great, but is anyone thinking the Chiefs are going to cut Travis Kelce this year or next year? That would be hard to believe. So he goes from 15 and 17.25 to 17 and 17.25. And unless I'm seeing this the wrong way, which I'll find out, it's $2 million over 2 years. Right? This is the extension Travis Kelce is signing. $2 million over 2 years. $1 million a year. All this year, getting the $2 million. So he goes from 15 this year to 17 this year. He goes from 17.25 next year to 17.25 next year. Now, he can say at 17.17, he's got the highest average of any tight end. But he didn't really get anything out of this deal except a guarantee that it's valuable if you think you're going to get cut. And $2 million, $1 million a year. Again, A.J. Brown's extension, $4 million a year for 3 years. Not bad. Not anything to get excited about. Travis Kelce's extension, $2 million new dollars. $2 million new dollars over 2 years. Just showing you that's what it is. That's the reality of these extensions that are reported as these major extensions. Again, telling it like it is, immune from the spin. This is the way I get it out to you. All right? Make sure you're getting my newsletter. And along with it come videos and instruction and monthly lecture, all part of my Sports Business League. Go to sportsbusinessleague.com. Doing the reels at Instagram, Andrew Brandt 2 at Instagram. Give us a rating, give us a review, wherever you find your podcasts. And of course, share this with a friend. I hope everyone can share this out and this insights that you can pass along. I'd really appreciate that. We're produced by Jack Connell, music producer Sam Brandt. Thanks to you for listening. And if you want to support the podcast, Venmo is Andrew-Brandt-20. Have a great week, everyone. We'll be back next week with another edition of The Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt.